Hello and welcome to Enlightened Empaths, your community for the spiritually awakened, where we discuss, explore, and connect with fellow empaths, healers, intuitives, and seekers. Hello, empaths. We are so excited to welcome Judith Orloff back on the show to discuss her brand new book called The Genius of Empathy: Practical Tools to Heal Yourself, Your Relationships, and the World. She has also written The Empath Survival Guide, among many other fantastic books. A UCLA psychiatric clinical faculty member, Dr. Orloff blends the pearls of conventional medicine with cutting-edge knowledge of intuition, empathy, energy medicine, and spirituality. She specializes in treating highly sensitive people in her private practice and online internationally. Her work has been featured on The Today Show, CNN, and Oprah Magazine. She's also spoken at Google LA, TEDx US, and TEDx Asia. She's also going to be in Venice, California on April 13th at 1 p.m. to launch this amazing, fantastic book we're about to discuss. She'll be at Mystic Journey Books in Santa Monica at an outdoor garden. We'll talk more about that towards the end of the show. But first, I'd love to just welcome you and dive into this fantastic new book. Welcome, Judith. We're so happy to have you back on.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back on with the two of you.
Well, I really, really enjoyed reading this book. You call it, you say in your book that it's a call to action and that you want to kind of widen the definition of empathy, which I found really a needed thing right now. And you present a question I think a lot of us empaths have struggled with. What good will empathy do when my own and the world's problems seem so daunting? I really appreciated the tone and the intelligence, but also kind of the unspoken angst that we empaths sometimes deal with. Can you kind of summarize your answer to that very big question of how can I help at all in this world?
Yes, that's such a beautiful question. And everyone can help. The reason I wrote this book was to present empathy as a healing force for your body, mind, and spirit, for your relationships, and also for the world. But you have to learn how to set clear boundaries with the world so you don't absorb all of the energy that's coming at you. And it's big time these days. It's like really so many different kinds of challenging energies. And it's important that you set a limit and realize it is not your job to take on the misery of the world. It doesn't help anybody. It just makes one more miserable person. So part of what I'm teaching in The Genius of Empathy is to observe, not absorb, to be able to see what's going on and maybe limit your news quota so that you're not inundated. You don't want to be inundated with this darker energy. You really don't. You want to be living your life and walking outside in nature and smiling, and you don't want to lose track of your life force. But at the same time, you can send people heart energy. What I do is I meditate at my altar in the evening, and I might just focus on the boundaries of the world and our beautiful earth and send out love from my heart and empathy from my heart and send it off on a mission to go where it needs to go and touch who it needs to touch. And you'd be amazed at the power of that, that you can all do too, much better than being miserable for other people. You know, you want to do something positive for other people. And who knows, you know, it might land, somebody might suddenly take a deeper breath. Somebody might wake up with a little bit of hope when they didn't have it. This kind of energy of empathy, it's magical, it's powerful, you can self-generate it. So I would spend more time doing that than being miserable for everyone and then making yourself miserable and sick.
Yeah, light up your own corner of the world. We always end each episode of this show by saying, share your light. And I think your book is such a great reminder of many, many things, but also just that you can share your light wherever you are, despite what's going on in the world.
And you must, and not lose track of that, because we need you more than ever, empaths. We need you now. And so it's important to summon all your gifts and your insights and your ability to connect and feel the global connection we have with all our human family and be able to create something positive, even in the midst of all this turmoil. We have to be able to function in the midst of turmoil. It's just a must. And that's what we're being called to do. And I want this book to make that easier for you and even enjoyable and empowering. And knowing when you have no empathy left too. There are those days where you have no empathy to give. So you stop, you go into your room, you close the door, you replenish yourself. You get very quiet, you meditate, you know, decrease stimulation and come back to your heart again. So you need to have these refueling times for empaths during, as you develop your empathy even more, which is what I'm suggesting, even more. And you know, you open up this podcast with, well, what good would that do? It has the power to change everything. You know, you just have to practice it in terms of your own healing and showing yourself some self-empathy. There's a whole chapter on developing self-empathy, which is the beginning of this healing process. Because it's all too easy to beat yourself up over a million different things. That's just human nature. And self-empathy is something different. It's a pact you make with yourself to encourage yourself and the positivity within you, and that you're not going to be your own tormentor. That's kind of a sacred vow you have to make in the beginning so that you're able to say, yes, I had a hard day. Yes, that person was impossible. Yes, my feelings got hurt. And yes, I did the best I could. And now I'm going to do all these great things to bring back my energy again.
That is so, so, so very poignant and important for all of us right now. I think many people are trying to find more self-acceptance, more self-love. They're trying to heal from generational patterns or old traumas. And I think many of our listeners are exemplary at sending out love and healing and empathy. What would be some ways to receive that back as well? Because so many people we speak with, they're great at throwing the lifeline, throwing the life ring, being there, supporting. But when it comes to receiving that empathy and kindness and love back, sometimes there's a block.
Yes, there is a block because it's so much easier, it seems like, to give to others than to give to oneself. But that's the great gift of this chapter. I mean, when I wrote it, I just felt layer upon layer upon layer of depth, you know, in terms of what this really means. And it's, you know, people said, how do you love yourself? You know, and it just seems like this big task. But the empathy, I want to make this point, and I make a point in the book. You have your mind and you have your heart. All right. In your mind, that's the part that's going to beat yourself up. That's where all the negative voices are. All right. So you don't want to start from there. You want to shift into your heart. And from the place of your heart, you want to send yourself that empathic energy so that that healing, vibrant Shakti life force begins to flow through your body. And you have to make the conscious shift, though. Most people don't know to do that because they don't know the two different places so well in themselves. You need to shift out of your mind into your heart and begin to send yourself energy, not just for 5 minutes, but as an ongoing practice in life, that this is part of who you want to be with yourself. And so it's important for empaths to spend the time to develop it. And there's a chapter on blocks to empathy as well. You know, You might find it's a little difficult. So I led you through the blocks too.
Yeah, I loved that chapter. And before I ask you about that, I just want to tell listeners, every chapter has so much knowledge in it, but it also has interactive exercises. And in the self-empathy chapter, there's a great quiz that's very eye-opening about how self-empathic you are with yourself. But I wanted to ask you in that chapter on blocks to empathy, and it's not just, you go back over it in several other places in the book as well. You say that being an empath is medicine for the mind, body, and soul, and that it's a form of peaceful warrior training, which I just loved that phrase. And then you go into these roadblocks that include healing our fears and releasing the need to be right. And that is something I am so passionate about, is people need to surrender the need to be right. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's a big one. That can really get you. If you always need to be right, it's really going to stop you from loving and showing empathy. And it will, it's human. You want to be right. Of course you do. And you probably are right a lot of the time, but that's not the point. No, the point is you don't want to be obsessed with being right. And there are times when I actually love giving that to somebody. If I hear them spouting on and on and I don't agree with something, no, but it, you know, it has meaning. And so I said, you know, I think you might have a point. And it makes them unbelievably happy to let somebody be right. So it's a practice I suggest with you. Just let someone be right. You don't have to agree with them. You could just say, that's an interesting perspective. I'm really going to think about that, you know, and then suddenly the person relaxes. They're not out to fight with you, as most times people are out to fight if you don't agree with them. And you know, I don't agree with a lot of people, you know, especially as a physician, and my fellow physicians, you know, have various ideas, and some of them, you know, don't believe in energy medicine, you know, or the depth of it, empathy and intuition as I do. But I never felt the need to have them agree with me. You know, I've been blessed with that. You know, as I really feel people are entitled to their own point of view. And we're all friends, you know, we can be with each other without having to agree all the time. And that's a form of elevation and maturity. Just because somebody is telling you something, it doesn't mean that you have to believe it or even respond to it. And that's why in the obstacles section, I really strongly encourage you to deal with your emotional triggers to help heal this part of your soul. Because if you're triggered a lot by, let's say, one thing, you know, when I, oh gosh, I'm part of a group and these people are triggered by know-it-alls. So if we have a speaker who comes in and is a know-it-all, the whole group is triggered. And it's important not, you know, if you have to look at your trigger, what if someone's a know-it-all? Was your mother a know-it-all? Was your father a know-it-all? Was your sibling a know-it-all? Did they constantly think they were right and you were wrong? Where did the trigger start? You know, and how can you begin to heal that so that when somebody says something that is know-it-all, like, you could be annoyed, but you won't have the dagger through your heart. And when you don't have the dagger through your heart, then you're not triggerable, really. No, you're free. You're free.
Exactly.
I think that leads beautifully and so, so well said. Thank you. Because I don't know any empath that doesn't struggle with that, no matter what the trigger is. Or
yeah.
I always joke that years ago I heard on an old movie that someone said, the people who can most hit your buttons are the ones who installed them. And that's how I feel about the triggers, is that they're deep and they're old. And as we're all doing this trauma work and this release work and this grief work, that we're finding where it is so we can finally pull that root out. I'm going to jump the tracks a little bit, but another part of your book is discovering your empathic style. And we have folks in our audience who are just beginning on this path of realizing their empaths, and then we have some who have, this is the way I've always been. What would be some ways people could really see what their empathic style might be?
Yes, you can, well, go through the four types in the book, and there's cognitive empathy, and this is people who express empathy mainly through their mind, you know, which is fine. These are usually the more intellectualized people. And then there's emotional empathy, where your default setting is that you show empathy through your heart. Your heart reaches out to somebody else, and you may tend to be an emotional sponge and take on all their emotions. And so you need to learn how to set boundaries. The third type is the intuitive empath, intuitive empathy, where when you're listening to people, you might notice that you get these intuitions about them. This is you know, a wonderful thing where suddenly your gut feeling will tell you something, or you get an aha or a flash, and it's your natural way of relating. So there's intuitive empathy, and then there's spiritual empathy, where there's some people who are so tuned into spirit, they see everyone through that lens, you know, and they're often the clergy or people who are doing service work, selfless service work, where they see the white light in people, you know, they see, you know, the beautiful connections that they have and where their heart is hurting and how they can help with spirit. It's a very interesting type of empathy. And so you could go through the four types of empathy in the book and say, which one do I have, or which one does my spouse have? And I just want to say that the cognitive empathy people often have a terrible time. You know, the empaths give them a terrible time because they think it's not enough. And I say it's enough if that's how somebody wants to express their empathy. And that's their way. They're really intellectual. They're linear. They're more comfortable with that. Then so be it. You know, accept them as they are, and accept any kind of empathy as a beautiful addition to this life.
I really appreciated your honesty in this book. You talk about how it's easy to be empathic in some situations, you know, like watching your child give birth, or, you know, those beautiful moments in life. It's easy to be empathic. But then you talk about how it's really hard to be empathic in other situations, like when you're arguing with a family member or dealing with a negative coworker. And you even say in there that those narcissists and sociopaths and psychopaths, they can't be changed, and you have to let that go. And you have some cord cutting information in there. What are some of your tips for choosing empathy during those times where you don't feel like an empath at all?
No, you don't. But that's natural. That's part of the process. You can't do this perfectly, you know, so I just want to let you off the hook on that. No. And if you're in an argument with someone, of course, you've been trained by society, you know, to fight, you know, or to get into whatever mode, or feeling low self-esteem and feeling crushed or feeling victimized, whatever your style is when you fight. But the first thing you do if you want to have empathy, see, I'm presenting in this book empathy as a healing path for life. This isn't just something you do every once in a while. It's something you want to apply to most things. And so if you're arguing with your spouse, there's an opportunity, right, to practice empathy. Your mind doesn't want to do that. Your mind is pissed off. Your mind is upset with this person. No, but you want to come from the heart. And so let's say you can't, you take a pause and come back and revisit it later. You say, you know, darling, this is not going the direction where we want. Let's just take a 5 or 10 minute break and come back. All right. You don't want to keep going on that energy. It's not healthy to do that. And it just destroys empaths. Empaths hate fighting. No, I know it just exhausts me. I don't get anything from it. You know, I just don't like to fight. I'm not a fighter. Then again, I don't want to avoid confronting certain issues. But even in the heat of an argument, I want you to ask yourself, how can I turn my empathy on here? This interaction is going downhill. And so you have an inner dialogue, and at very least you take a break so you can recenter yourself and decide where you want to come from. And oftentimes I want to say with coworkers or other people, you have to be the one to take the first step towards empathy, because they're not going to do it. So I want you to be clear about that. You have to be the change starts with me person.
Not easy, but so, so important. And I think a part of that is releasing the need to be right, even in an argument. And just, you know, you talk a lot about being a listener and just taking time to listen to their side as well. I think that's crucial.
It is, but you don't want to listen endlessly. No, you want to have these short kind of communication, shorter. And always when you're dealing with somebody with conflict, you want to deal with one topic at a time. Where a lot of empaths make a mistake is that suddenly they're bringing up everything. You know, their spouse is listening. Finally, they're there. And you bring up everything but the kitchen in the kitchen sink, you know, and that's going to lose them. You only do one topic at a time. as tempting as it is to bring up everything they ever did. You don't want to do that because you will not succeed. Your goal has to be success, and success means you want to reach them so that you come to some kind of compromise or a step forward. Your goal is not to keep fighting. All right. And I know some couples, you know, who don't practice empathy, and they're like an old habits, you know, wound mate kind of people. You know, they just fight all the time, and they don't know how to get out of it. And it's very destructive. You know, fighting, you know, it's inevitable, but you don't want to fight too much, you know, and you want to always ask yourself, how can the genius of empathy help me here? All right. How can I get to a place where I want to be, but I'm not feeling it? So you don't want to emotionally bypass anything in yourself. At the same time, you want to have a higher goal in mind.
It seems like practicing with the people that are closest, the ones who may have installed the buttons, would be a great way to be able to utilize those skills in other situations. And we've talked to a lot of folks who have said that they're fine, they have dear friends or they have family who supports them, but then in their work environment, that's where they really struggle with being an empath, because they are maintaining a level of professionalism, or it's not conducive in that environment to let people know how sensitive they are. So what would be some techniques or some skills for people to, I don't want to say protect their empathy, because I'm finally at the point in my life where I see it as a superpower and not a negative. I think we're all very blessed to be so sensitive and to be so connected with our empathy and compassion.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But the thing is, you want to see people realistically. And one of the blocks to empathy are unrealistic expectations. So you want to look at your coworker and analyze them. You want to say, all right, what kind of issue are they presenting? In the book, I have different issues like complaining, chronic talking, drama queen, king. Now, what are they? You have to identify them first to know how to approach them. And let's say you have a narcissistic boss, you know, the worst case scenario. That's a terrible scenario because, you know, I suggest people try and get another job with that scenario, but a lot of times you can't. And so what you need to do is lower your expectations, realize the narcissistic boss has empathy deficient disorder, which means they don't really care about your feelings. You know, even though they might give it lip service at times, they don't. And the only way to get what you need is to express how whatever the decision is will benefit the boss. I'm telling you those three tips to so you can get results, but they are going to put down your self-esteem. They are not going to behave in a respectful way. But that's just how these people are. And because you're not on the same power level, you can't really discuss that with them. Although, you know, some human resource groups in organizations are actually helpful with that, but you don't know. You'd have to feel them out, you know, to help better the relationship. But it's like The Devil Wears Prada, that movie. You know, the typical narcissist, you know, was leading. I think it was Vogue, and there was Anne Hathaway was the secretary. You know, just being run ragged by this malignant but charming narcissist. So it was, you know, and we have narcissists all over in the public stage now. So, you know, but at work is important in order to identify the problem behavior for you, and then read in that chapter in the book what to do about it, and then begin to apply what to do about it and see if you get some results.
Beautiful. Thank you.
One of the blocks to empathy, besides the, you know, releasing the need to be right, is overthinking. And I think that's something especially cognitive empaths have to deal with, is, you know, we often get stuck and trapped in the cycle in our heads of trying to be there for everyone. What are some of your suggestions for maybe pausing this need to overthink all the time or healing it completely?
Well, yes, but just realize that healthy empathy doesn't mean helping everybody 100% of the time. All right, that's impossible. And if that's what you're doing, you're out of balance because you're not taking care of yourself in a certain way. It's wonderful to give, but it's a different thing to become a martyr. And I've seen so many empaths become martyrs where they just give their blood to everyone and they give their life force so that they become sick or depressed. And so you don't want to do that. You want to limit your empathy, and you want to tap into your intuition to find out how your body's doing every day. Your body is your friend, and your body will really, you know, help you if you can talk to it a little bit, you know, and really listen to what your body is saying so you don't overtax yourself. And there's a whole chapter on healthy giving versus codependent giving. With codependent giving, everything is about the other person and you want to please them and make them happy. It's not about you. And therefore, it's out of balance. You need to have a kind of giving practice that makes you feel good and that allows you to replenish yourself as well.
Well, I think that that's what so many people are struggling with post-COVID and re-entering the workforce, leaving at-home situations, and then suddenly they've had that buffer zone and it's gone or it's leaving, and they're trying to figure out how to re-acclimate socially or in different settings. So
Yes. You
mention in your book about recognizing and protecting yourself from our, you know, the narcissists, the sociopaths, the bullies. But what are some other, we know, I mean, for me, if I don't go out in nature, it's bad. I need that every single day. I need that time alone to regroup. Before we got on this call, I took a walk in the woods just to recharge my batteries. And I know that that's a beautiful, beautiful gift for many, many people. What are some other things we can do, maybe in the spur of the moment when we're feeling a bit reactive or having a hard time connecting with our empathy towards someone else?
How do we replenish ourselves at that point?
When it's that instantaneous. So if we can, I always, you know, look at it, I'm going to pre-teach, I'm going to make sure that I take care of myself and get time in nature and quiet time and time alone and I journal and all the things that we do to take care of ourselves. But are there any techniques that can almost like pull up the empathy shield when we need it? If we're in a situation where someone cuts us off in traffic or someone says something belligerent, or how can we, I hope I'm articulating that because I'm struggling to find the right words for it.
Yeah, well, it's upsetting when people cut you off in traffic and when people are belligerent and, you know, just really speaks to the state of our world right now. But that's where empathy comes in. I want everyone to realize that when people act that way, they're not happy. You know, happy people don't act that way. So they're suffering or they're crippled or they're very limited in how they are. I always try and, you know, I don't always succeed, but try and find these brilliant responses to them. If I encounter somebody like that, so like them around and send them to another place. Or like, what just happened to me? You know? And so sometimes, you know, I will try and come up with a brilliant thing. Like, what would a brilliant thing be? Something like if they're kind of berating my belief system or something like that. You know, and I could just turn it around and I said, well, your belief system, you know, I'd like to hear about that too, you know, and make it about them instead of me getting upset or how can you do that to me? You know, I could just change the whole energy of the interaction by putting it
so
back.
Kind of volley it back.
Yeah, I don't want it. So. Oh, I think after the fact, I think of all these brilliant things I could say or do. But in the moment, it's you don't want to be hooked in by their craziness and by their you know, prodding. People are like that. It's unfortunately, you know, our culture is not exactly full of social etiquette, which know, when I was growing up, I was this hippie girl and I didn't want any social etiquette. I didn't want any rules. I didn't want anything. And now I'm yearning for the social etiquette and the proper, you know, civilized way of treating each other. So it's funny how you change at different time periods.
You do. And it comes down to being kind. It really does. Just be kind. But that's a story for another day, I guess.
But kind of, I want to say non-reactive, because like with the narcissist, you don't want to be reactive because then, you know, you're giving them what's called their supply. They get built up when you're reactive. And so everybody, you know, who's dealing with all the difficult people at work, you know, or anywhere else, please don't be reactive. If you find yourself doing that, then excuse yourself and go to the bathroom and recenter yourself. But being reactive will only make things worse. And I'm not saying that's true with good friends or close family. I'm saying with work cohorts, you don't want to be reactive to them. Work is a different environment. You know, it's a different kind of environment, and the power level is usually different with people, the boss and the employee, or if you're the supervisor. So it's a trickier thing. You do not want to react. You want to use the gray rock method, you know, which is used for narcissists, where you just pretend you're a gray rock and you respond like a gray rock would, which is with not very much emotion, but yet you could be solution oriented. Or if you don't know what to say, just say, I hear what you said, and let's revisit this, you know, really soon once I can absorb it. So you want to steer the energy away from blaming, shaming, or anger. You want to do that. See, this takes some skill, but you can do it, because you can do it by not being reactive. And if you're not reactive, what you're feeling inside is, oh my God, this feels terrible. This person is just horrible to work with. You know, you think of whatever level you're experiencing it, that's fine. So you don't want to bypass those feelings. But then the next level of inner dialogue is, what can I do to shift the energy? You know, and, you know, really talk to yourself through it. And if you're so pissed off, you can't do anything, just excuse yourself and go to the bathroom to gather yourself together again and listen to what the person is requesting, you know, or you know, maybe the person is a chronic talker and can't stop talking. They just can't. So you can use I'm not available body language and switch your body around to a different position. Look at them, smile, and say, I'm really going to hold that in my thoughts for you, you know, and good luck. I got to go back to my project now, but thank you. I'm going to hold that in my thoughts. And then in 10 seconds, you're out of there.
Well, that was a helpful part of your book when you talked again, honestly, about how most of these narcissists will never change and they're never going to realize what they're doing. And so the gray rock method is really the only one that works. And you also recommend kind of playing along with their game so that you can protect yourself. I wanted to ask you too about those busy seasons in our lives. We hear from a lot of empaths right now who are really busy taking care of children or ailing parents. And I know you wrote about that in this book, about how you had to take care of your parents and ask for help and really take care of yourself during that time. I think empaths in particular are even harder on themselves during those busy seasons. I always tell people to remind themselves that it is just a season. You know, it's not your whole life. But can you talk to people about steps and strategies for soliciting that help? And I don't even mean just hiring people, because some people don't have the resources to do that, but getting in a comfortable position to ask for help when needed.
Yes. Well, there's a section on the sacred duty of caregiving, which I wrote about, because I've had a lot of, you know, both of my parents and other relatives who've been extremely ill. I've been quite involved with all of it. And it's a passage, let's put it that way. It's a sacred passage that will ask a lot of you. And for that reason, you need to be able to ask for help, even if that means, you know, spending time with your little doggy and having your doggy love you up for a while, you know, so you can, you know, feel that love, or getting out in nature, you know, or getting away from your loved one who's suffering. So you can't be around constant suffering. You know, you need to have breaks so that you can remember yourself and you don't give yourself away. But know what sacred acts you're giving. I mean, I was there, you know, when my father died, and I was able to kind of be with his body, and I cried, and my tears went down his heart, you know, and I saw that, and it's a beautiful, I don't know, so beautiful and painful. And it's something we empaths have to do at a certain point when we're helping our parents or our loved ones through physical challenges or emotional challenges. But how do you find time for yourself? You have to do it. You have to look at it as a way to be even more present with your loved ones. But you've got to go out and, however you can do it, live your life, you know, as much as you can. And of course, if you have the finances, you can get helpers, and that's ever so useful. But most people don't have that. But you can have, maybe you have a family who's able to come together and help. But for me, it was only me for a long time, until I did, you know, have a couple who helped, a beautiful angelic couple who helped me and helped in so many ways. I remember when my father died, and he had kind of lost touch with all his friends because he didn't want his friends to see him in this state. He had Parkinson's disease. And so there were just a small number of people who came to the memorial. And I mean, when we put him in the ground, and I remember this couple said to me, they said, "Don't worry how many people are here. We'll stand here with our hands held together. And, you know, this is not a popularity contest. You know, this is not, that's not what this is. This is about us coming together and having a wonderful send-off for your father." And it was so helpful, you know, to have people who say things that are actually helpful and not a hindrance. And so with that help, I got through, you know, his burial. And I just use that example because it's particularly touching to me, and it's always poignant. But we need help, however you can get it. Animal help, people help. There's often free group help. In terms of grieving groups, which I've put the resources in the Genius of Empathy, but it's a big topic. I could probably write a whole 10 books on this. It's such a sacred topic, and it's very wearing for empaths to do this. But I want to tell you, in retrospect, for me, when I look back, it was one of the most important things I ever did, helping my parents to pass over, both of them. No, but it really asks a lot of you, and you have to delegate if you can to whoever is there.
Yeah, it's so important during that time, and to be honest with what your needs are and what your parents' needs are. You know, listeners know my mother was an interesting personality, and when my sister and I decided we needed help at the end, I called a caregiving institution and I said, "I need someone who smokes, loves celebrity gossip, and doesn't mind a negative person."
Oh, how wonderful of you.
And we met this wonderful caregiver named Mandy, who would bring all her People magazines and Enquirers and read to my mom. And at her last days, she would come to hospice and braid her hair and do her nails. And she was tough as nails, just like my mom, and such a gift, you know. But if my sister and I had the empathic observance and skill to say, okay, this is getting too much for us. And then to be honest with, you know, we didn't need a kind, loving couple like your beautiful father had. We needed someone who was tough and, you know, could match my mom's energy.
Yeah. That's perfect. I think that's such a good lesson for everybody, you know, in terms of, you know, seeing who your mom or dad really are and giving them what they need, not what you need. So, right. And so that's, I love that. I just love that.
Or not even what's appropriate or expected. So many people, judged us. You let your mom smoke, you know, and we were like, look, she's been smoking her entire life. She's not going to stop now. She's in pain. This is what brings her pleasure. And so, you know, here you go, mom. Here's your Marlboros. And it really did bring her a lot of joy. And so you just kind of have to be gentle with yourself in those stages. But I do think it's important for anyone who is in that busy season of their life to get this book, for anyone to get this book. But because of all your sections on there on how to really take care of you and set boundaries with others, but also with yourself. And I love how you talk about the difference between compassion and empathy and how we really do have to put up a boundary sometimes with feeling too much.
Yes, yes, you can go on empathy overwhelm. That's another obstacle to feeling empathy. And so that's why it's absolutely essential that empaths and all empathic people learn how to set boundaries. You learn how to say, no, I'm sorry, I cannot do that right now because I'm so exhausted. I need to go home and take care of myself. It's very important that we're empathic models for other people. And other people need to see how we do it and do it in a compassionate way, not a shaming way or a dramatic way, but just, this is just what I need for myself. I'm sorry, I can't do what you're asking. And you know, I love you. And you say it in that kind of way. And so part of the genius of empathy is learning how to set boundaries, say a positive yes, which means your eyes, you know, have loving energy in them. Your tone of voice is very kind. And you're saying a loving yes or a loving no. You know, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I wish I could. And empaths have to get used to disappointing people. You know, it's very hard for them because many empaths are people pleasers. And, you know, there will be times where you won't be able to fulfill people's requests. And I say that's good. I say that's healthy. You know, yeah. You have to take care of yourself. You do the best you can. It's not, empathy is not, healthy empathy is not being on call for people 24 hours a day. That sounds horrible. Who would ever want to do that? I mean, like really a codependents love doing that, but it's not healthy for them. And so it's, empathy is about, the way I've divided it up in this book is about taking care of self. It's improving your relationships. And it's also doing what you can to heal the world and our human family who we're all connected to.
Well, you know, I want listeners to know that if they go to drjudithorloff.com and pre-order your book, The Genius of Empathy, holy cow, you get $300 worth of stuff. You get her ebook, 4 Ways Empathy Can Empower You in Your Relationships. You get access to a 2-hour online workshop, Healing the Toxic Attraction Between Empaths and Narcissists, another online workshop, Secrets for Sensitive People to Empower Their Relationships, and another online workshop, Support for Empaths During Stressful Times, and Building Compassion, Releasing Resentments Workshop, and Self-Care Practices. That's a lot of giveaways. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I wanted to give away a lot, and it's for everybody. So, go enjoy and get all that free material. And I hope you enjoy the book and develop your empathy even more. You know, or if you're beginning, the beginning is a sacred process, and be excited, you know, be happy. It's a path that you will never feel badly about when you're lost and when you don't know where to go. If you follow this path, you will end up in the right place. I guarantee you. So it's a very healthy, healing, exciting path to be on, the path of empathy as we all travel it together.
Beautifully said. Mm-hmm. And tell people before we wrap up what they can expect at your book launch on April 13th in Santa Monica.
Yes, I invite everyone. It's outdoor in their garden in Mystic Journey Books on Main Street. And I'm going to give a book talk, and then we're going to have a discussion. We're going to have an empathy discussion, and I'll do a book signing. And also a friend of mine has composed an empath song, which she is going to perform. So that will be fun.
Denise, let's make our plane reservations.
Yes, I think we can make it.
Yeah, everyone is invited. I look forward to the day where all you two and we all can be together. And, you know, talk about empathy. And this is such an empowering subject. So I invite everyone there. And I also have online events for those of you who aren't in Santa Monica, California or LA. And the online events are going to be really fun. And I have one sponsored by East West Books, which is on April 20th. And so you can sign up for that. And so it's just, I haven't been doing in-person events for so long. This is going to be a new adventure for me going back into the world and in that sense of giving the a few in-person events.
Oh, that's exciting. That's a treat for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it will be. I'm excited about it. I've just been very protective, you know, of my empath self the last few years.
As you should be. So yeah, see, you're walking your walk too. Well, thank you so much for coming back on. It's just such an honor every time to get a chance to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor always to be with both of you.
Well, thank you. And please, please know how much you're appreciated and your work is You're the holy grail of this work. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, I think.
It's a compliment.
Yeah. Oh, a lot to live up to.
Well, thank you, Dr. Orloff. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please remember, as always, to show up, do great work, and share your light.
Take care.